Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening. Tom Moran here from Tom's Big Spider. So it was an interesting week as far as correspondence and comments and emails. I've been doing this for a long time. I mean, obviously started off with the website, and I would get people that would contact me via the comments on the articles I'd post or the Jumi emails. Now we have Facebook, obviously, which I don't get around to as often. And then we have the YouTube channel where I get a lot of my comments. And every once in a while, you just have a bad week. Usually I am, in full disclosure, I luck out in terms of having hostile or nasty people comment on my stuff. I've been very, very lucky having spoken to friends of mine that do YouTube channels and hearing some of the stuff that they put up with, I really can't complain that much. But every once in a while, you just get like a little week or a few days in a row where you get some kind of infuriating comments. And it for me, it's just like I spend so much time trying to answer people's questions and help people out that it just irritates me when I get something like this. So like one of them was about, I posted a video on the keeper cards I was kind of excited about. But again, through the whole video, made the point of saying, I know these aren't for everybody. I'm not trying to sell them to anybody. It's just for people that are interested in the keeper cards or that might like a keeper card with my ugly mug on it. They're out there. Here they are. And somebody came on and basically went on this tirade about how I need to start putting money before education and just all kinds of things that I should have just laughed off. It was ridiculous, but it was obvious she had no idea what my channel was about. So it kind of struck a nerve. So it was one of the few times that I came back with something that wasn't silly. A lot of times when I get something where somebody's either trolling or just says something so outrageous that I'm like, can't help but laugh, I come back with something kind of funny to kind of diffuse it. In this case, I wasn't funny about it. It kind of irritated me. And then I got called cancel culture for something because of the podcast. It was in response to my Peace Letheria podcast. Somebody apparently was just catching up with that one. The only good thing that came out of that is we had a nice conversation. I shared my side of the story. The guy was very reasonable. So that had a happy ending. And then there was another one where somebody came on. And basically in the beginning of one of my videos, I did a feeding video and I had some people come on before that. One guy said that I had the most boring channel out there and that I need to spice things up. And then we had a discussion with some of the people that frequent my channel about why I don't have ads. And I'm not going to get into all that again. But anyway, the beginning of this feeding video, a lot of times feeding videos, people will check those out that have never seen your channel before. They'll bring some new people in. So I figured that would be a good opportunity to kind of talk about what I do and how I'm different from other YouTubers. And this person took a lot of offense to the fact that I pointed out that I don't have ads and that I don't do this for money and thought I was targeting some other YouTuber. And again, after I came back and said, listen, I'm really kind of taken back by this. I was trying to defend myself from some comments other people had said and try to basically warn people that I'm not your average YouTube channel. And then she came back and apologized and all was good. So a couple of them ended up well. And then we had a couple where people posted some bizarre stuff. And that's going to be our topic today. Some of the most bizarre things that I've been asked or bizarre things that people have tried to offer me advice on, because again, been doing this a while and a lot of times people will see an article or a video and they'll want to offer me advice, which is fine. Believe me, this isn't about not taking advice from people, but sometimes the stuff that people, I always try to respond, you know, to every comment. I always try to at least come back with something like, hey, that's a neat idea. Sometimes they hit you with things that are so strange and so bizarre, and in some instances, so entirely wrong that it becomes very difficult to not come back with like, what in God's name are you talking about? That's a terrible idea. And I try to be nice. I try to open up a dialogue with people when they come with something weird. It's always like, oh, okay, I can see where you're going with that, but have you thought about this? Or, yep, unfortunately, we've already proven that's not a good idea. Because sometimes what happens is people get into hobbies and they're creative thinkers and they start to experience some things with the spiders. They haven't maybe done as much research as they should, or they've witnessed something that maybe they haven't read anything about, and they immediately jump to the conclusion that they've just made this big discovery. And again, in most cases, they're not meaning any harm. They just don't have the background. In most of these cases, in most of these instances, they don't have the background knowledge to basically show them that, hey, this really isn't a good idea, or hey, this is something that we've already kind of figured out in the hobby doesn't work. But I'm telling you, over the years, there's been some humdingers. So what I did is I sat down and tried to go through, I actually did some searches for words and email. I was able to find some of the actual emails for some of them, but I'm not going to read them word for word because I do not want it to seem like I'm making fun of people. That's important. It's like, it's one of the things I want to share because I think it puts in perspective as far as a lot of us, when we got into hobby, we did some strange strange things. I'll share one. When I first started getting into the hobby and keeping old worlds, I was actually looking into, somebody had made one of these. It was basically an acrylic tank that they had the holes that you could put your hands through, and they had puncture proof gloves. So it's kind of like in the movies where somebody's working with radioactive material and they put their hands through those little holes and they have the protective gloves on and they're making sure. It was something like that. And I actually looked into that at one point. I was like, hey, well, there'd be absolutely no chance of getting bit whatsoever if we had the spider totally contained and I had puncture proof gloves on. And it was short-lived. And after doing more research, I realized how silly it was, but I'm just calling myself out on it. Back in the day, that was something I looked at. So I'm not judging people. And the most of the people on this list did kind of listen to my counter arguments that this isn't a good idea. I will bring up the ones where they didn't, or in the cases where I came back with, hey, that's not a good idea, and never heard the outcome. But I think we can all probably predict the outcome. And in some cases, it's not going to be a particularly positive outcome. So again, not to make fun of people. Hopefully, every time I do one of these podcasts where I talk about some, you know, situation where I've talked to people, there's always somebody that comes out and goes, oh my God, I'm so embarrassed. And it wasn't them I was talking about. This just happened with one of the ones I just did. I forget which one it was, but somebody came on and went, I'm so embarrassed. I was the one that sent you that email. I'm like, no, yours was nothing to do with this. So just know the majority of the ones that I chose for this are quite old. One of them, I believe, is like 10 years old. One was like 8 years old. I went back again through the emails just to kind of make sure I was remembering them correctly. And some of these people, I can tell you, because of the way the conversations ended up, they're probably not listening to me right now. So please don't think, or if you think I'm talking about you, shoot me an email. I don't want anybody freaking out, because again, this isn't so much, I think we will laugh, and I laugh at myself. So again, with me, with the puncture proof gloves, with the radioactive box, containment box or whatever, I'm making fun of myself as well. There are some things we can laugh at, but some of these you'll see aren't necessarily funny and kind of sad, but it shows you how people can go astray in the hobby, how they can come in with, you know, they see something and they get this idea in their head that, oh, A plus B obviously equals C, and they run with it. And unfortunately, that's not the case. So to kick this one off, I'm going to start with one that was mentioned to me a while ago. When I think I did a video, or it was a article on substrate, and I had mentioned some substrate, and somebody chimed in with their ingredients for substrate. And basically, this woman had read that where some of the spiders come from, they have salt in the dirt, in the ground. So she had come up with the idea that she was going to start adding salt to her substrate. And we're not talking about a pinch of salt. There was a considerable amount of salt when she gave me the proportions added to her substrate. And in her mind, the salt actually created an environment that led to more vibrant spiders. So I'm getting this email and she's telling me, and I, when somebody approaches me, I never want to come across like that jerk that doesn't want to listen to somebody else's opinion. And that's something that's very important to me, that if somebody approaches me with something out in left field, that they don't think I'm making fun of them, that they realize I am listening. I may immediately be going, there's no way, but I am listening. But I don't want people to think, oh, this guy thinks he knows everything, he's not listening to some other input. It's never like that. So she hit me with this and I'm like, oh dear. So we kind of had a nice little back and forth, and I was trying to explain to her that my big fear is that when tarantulas are, you know, especially slings, if you're dealing with slings, they don't have that waxy coating that protects them and protects them from dehydration. And if you're adding salt to the substrate, that's a desiccant. Use that when you make cured meats to dry the meat up. And I would honestly worry about slings, and I would worry about molting adults getting that salt on them and having them dry up when they molt. And she assured me, oh no, they not only don't dry up, but they end up being more vibrant. And then she sent me some pictures of what looked like, I believe there was a bee hammer eye, there was a rose hair, the G. rosé or G. porteri, and she was trying to show me that, look at, their colors are super vibrant. Well, what was pretty apparent was that she had jacked up all the levels on the pictures so that they looked like they were super vibrant and colorful. So for example, the G. porteri almost looked purple. It was so bright. So again, it was one where I was like, well, you know, I do appreciate the suggestion. You've given me a lot to think about, but I would definitely encourage you not to add salt. There is no need to add salt to your substrate. And the best case scenario, it's doing nothing for your spiders. And the worst case scenario, it's going to create a hazard for them because it could possibly dry them up. So that was, at that point, one of the more strange things I'd ever been approached with. I remember just, it was earlier on when I was starting to feel comfortable offering people advice. And I remember feeling like really struggling to not sound like a total jerk by going, that is a terrible, terrible idea. And she did not get back. I think the way it ended off, and I did look this one off, I had shot her some questions and she didn't get back to me. So hopefully she stopped adding it. But in her mind, and this is where it gets difficult, she had added the salt and she was seeing bright tarantulas, not recognizing that A, she was adjusting the levels on her phone or on her camera, and B, the reason why she was seeing bright tarantulas after a molt is because they all get bright after a molt. That's when their colors are usually the most vibrant. So that was definitely an interesting one. Next one up, we'll call it trick or treat. It was an individual that had taken to dressing up her tarantulas. It was weird. She sent me pictures. And it was a bunch of her spiders. And again, they were mostly beginner species. I believe there was a T. albopilosis. I believe there was a G. porteri. I want to say there was back in the day, Brachypelma smithii, which is now Hemorrhoeae. But she sent me pictures of them dressed up. Like they had hats on and sunglasses, little hats, little sunglasses, like doll size stuff. And she's like, oh, isn't this amazing? And I was like, oh, that's cute. I just feel kind of bad for the spiders because they normally don't like to be messed with like that. It's like when you see people post pictures of their dogs and they put like sunglasses and hats on them. And then some of the dogs are like, yeah, look at me. And others of the dogs are looking at them like, are you kidding me? I got the are you kidding me vibe from the spiders. So I came back and went, oh, yeah, I really wouldn't mess with mine like that. And then she came back with the weirdest thing about how her spiders actually enjoy it. And that's how she spends time with them. She takes them out and they like it. They feel good about themselves. I kid you not. You can't make this stuff up. And again, it's hard. I don't want it to seem like I'm making fun of people, but it was kind of a strange concept for me because although the debate is still up in the air about how intelligent, emotionally intelligent they are, I had people come on and say they can learn things, and we'll get to a couple as we get further into this list. I'm going to go out on a limb and say there isn't a tarantula out there that enjoys having little hats, sunglasses, wigs glued temporarily to its carapace so it looks like a little human tarantula hybrid. And so she had sent me a bunch more pictures showing me them posed and look at how relaxed they are, and they come out and they let me do this to them and they like it. And I just felt so sorry for those spiders because they definitely don't need to be messed with in that manner. That's just, they're not toys. It was, for me, it was a tough one to be nice about. And again, I always try to be polite as possible and open-minded as possible. It was a tough one because it's like, you're just messing with these poor animals. They do not like it. There is no way on earth anybody is ever going to convince me that a tarantula, any species, enjoys being taken out, played with, and having clothes and fake hats and wigs and sunglasses and stuff glued on it while pictures are taken. There's no way. It may tolerate it. It may be like, I don't know what the heck's going on. I'm afraid of what this woman will do if I fight back, so I'm just going to go with it. I don't know what the deal was. Her retort when I said you really shouldn't play with them like that, they're not toys, was, well, they wouldn't let me do this if they didn't like it. And it was like, oh, how do I come back from this one? I'm like, you know what? They're just tolerating it. There's a difference between tolerating and liking things. When I was a kid, I had a grandmother who used to grab my face and pinch the crap out of my cheeks every time she saw me. And I didn't like it. It really bothered me, but I tolerated it because it was my grandmother. I didn't want to offend her. So I thought that was one of the most bizarre things. I think I cut that one off where it was one of those ones. Sometimes when you go back and forth with people a little bit, they hit you with these emails that are literally like 10,000 words long of all the things they've observed and things they've tried. And I just didn't see it going anywhere. We weren't going to agree. So we just had to kind of agree to disagree. And I didn't want to get any further into this bizarre discussion. So we let it go. But yep, that was, and it wasn't really a Halloween thing either. She did it all the time. She had ones where it was like they were dressed up for her birthday. There was Christmas ones where they were dressed up with like Santa hats on, stuff like that. And sometimes if you're on Instagram, you'll see people will do this and they'll put little things and take a picture of it. But this was different. This was in a league of its own where she actually thought that the spiders appreciated playing dress up. So that was definitely an odd one. I will never forget that. It was a lot of time spent. And that's the other thing with some of these ones where I have only so much time in a day to respond to emails and messages. And when I get one of these, they tend to sap up so much time because I carefully choose how I go back to try to, you know, change their mind about what they're doing and their behaviors and these strange things they're seeing or whatever. And so they end up being these long back and forths, which can sometimes be exhausting for me because it's like, all right, I have somebody over here asking about a water dish, but here I'm trying to talk a girl out of dressing her tarantulas up like dolls. So Whew. So next one up, we'll call Come When I Call You. As you might guess, this was an individual. Now, I've heard, just to put this out there, I've had people tell me that their tarantulas seemingly respond to the sound of their voice, that they hear them, they hear whatever. I mean, I can honestly see that maybe they detect the bass in your voice and they recognize, maybe there's a possibility that they recognize that a human's there. And usually when a human's there and that close, it means the enclosure gets opened and they are given food. So it could be like a Pavlovian response. I hear the bass in my owner's voice or my keeper's voice. That means food's coming, so I'm going to come up and respond to it. That, you could convince me of that, perhaps. I'm not totally sold, but I could see something like that happening. This was totally different. The person came on and asked why I didn't name my tarantulas, and I explained how back when I was first getting into the hobby, I was too busy trying to learn the scientific names, and if I had named them, you know, funny, cuddly names, I wouldn't have practiced the scientific names. So by the time I got to the point where I knew the scientific names, I was already in that habit, so that I only name ones that really earn a name. There are spiders that, you know, like the queen, for example, that's been around forever. The spiders have to kind of earn a name. When one comes to me, they get a name, but I don't force it. And this person was like, no, you're not doing right by your spiders. Do you have dogs? Would you not name your dogs? I'm like, no, of course I name my dogs. I got to call my dogs and they come when they call them. And they're like, spiders will do the same thing. I'm like, okay, this just took a turn. So I'm like, please, you know, enlighten me. What are you talking about? Where are we going with this? And basically the explanation was that her tarantulas, she had named all of them and they would come when they would call their individual names. And she said she had tested this out because she would take a tarantula out. So say the tarantula's name was, I don't know, Juan. She'd take Juan out and she'd call Bob and Juan wouldn't move. And then she'd call Sarah and Juan wouldn't move. And then she'd finally go Juan and Juan would respond. So in her mind, the tarantulas were actually responding to their specific names the way a dog or a human or smarter animal or more emotionally intelligent animal would, which I found mind-boggling. So again, it's one of those ones you hear this response back and you're like, oh Lord, how do we even approach this? So I'm like, well, that's really interesting. From what I know about arachnid intelligence and tarantula intelligence, that's way above and beyond where we think they are as far as intellect. Do you have videos of this? Could you please record it? So she's like, I would be happy to get you videos of me calling my tarantulas and I will show you that certain ones respond to certain names. Never heard back from her. So I don't know what happened if she tried to record it. Part of me wanted to think she was trolling, but you can tell, and all of these, I will say flat out, I know there's going to be people out there going, there's no way. There's no way somebody believed that. They were messing with you. You can tell when somebody's trolling. You can tell when somebody believes something, because when they believe something, they spend a lot of time. Like, these people would spend a lot of words trying to explain what they were seeing. They believed it. They thought it was true. And this individual thought that when she called her spiders by their assigned names, they would actually respond and come to her. So again, if she had shown me that footage, that would have been amazing. I would have been the first one to go, can I interview you? And can we get this out there so people can see it? Because that would have kind of totally upended all we think about tarantula intelligence. But we're not to that point. So again, if you're one of the ones, I know I've had people approach me over the years and say, hey, when my tarantula hears me talking, it comes out. I'm not arguing that. This is something different. This is responding to your actual name. I call my tarantula Tom. He comes running when I say Tom, not when I say Billy, not when I say Roan, not when I say Kane, not when I say Kale, just Tom. So that I don't believe. I would have to see a lot of compelling footage to even begin to think that was remotely possible. So I don't know what was going on. The fact that she didn't get back to me, and I did actually follow up because I was kind of hoping she would come up with something. I was really curious to see what she'd come up with, but I did follow up with it. I did not hear anything back from her. So that one was kind of dead in the water, but I still found it to be one of the most bizarre things I had ever heard somebody approach me with. You know, again, I get approached a lot about not having names. And I think some people think because I don't name them, I don't care about them or care for them. And I have to explain that a lot, but this was a totally different ballgame. So this next one wasn't actually all that long ago, maybe a year or so ago, a year or two ago. It was during the height of the pandemic. And I talked about what to do if we weren't able to find crickets or, you know, obviously shipping was all screwed up and some of the pet stores were closing. And I did a whole thing on this and somebody emailed me and went, you know, you don't even have to worry about that type of stuff because there's other things you can feed that you can just find in your local grocery store. Now, we've all seen pictures online and circulated on Facebook groups of people feeding their tarantulas like big chunks of raw chicken and big chunks of raw beef. This person was feeding their tarantulas chunks of hot dog. I kid you not. They said that they had always had hot dogs on hand. The younger son, enjoyed hot dogs. So they were sitting there one night and they didn't have food items and they fed their tarantula a chunk of hot dog and the tarantula ate it. Now, I'm not going to discount that the tarantula would eat the hot dog. We already have, you know, obviously footage out there showing tarantulas eating meat or whatever, but a hot dog. So I'm like, hey, I don't know. I said, if it came down to it, you could probably use a chunk of chicken or something if it really, you know, if you got desperate, but I don't think I would feed a tarantula a hot dog. I mean, they're filled with preservatives. They're very salty. Not a good combo. I don't think we should be feeding tarantulas something they ingest that has a lot of salt in it. I mean, they're not good for humans. They're not going to be good for spiders. So the fact that somebody would feed their tarantula hot dogs kind of blew my mind a bit. And I did kind of come back with, hey, I don't know if that would be the healthiest thing in the world. I mean, it would probably work. I'm not discounting that they'd eat it. And they're like, no, it works great. We always have them on hand. I don't always have chicken on hand. So there was a situation where somebody was really thinking outside the box, but I really worry that tarantula is going to have some health issues down the road because I would not feed a tarantula processed food. I don't know if Billy asked me, she saw some of the stuff on Facebook of people feeding the chicken and asked me if I'd ever tried that. And it's like, you know, if it was a situation, you know, where I didn't have something big enough for it, I guess it would be okay. I've seen people do it. It's not, my big thing is with the biological matter, when you feed them something like meat or you feed them a vertebrate, that the mess it makes as they dissolve and consume that prey item drips onto the surface of their substrate. It can become like a magnet for bacteria. So that would be my thing. It's really messy, but they probably, you know, I don't see any issue with them eating chicken or stuff like that. I wouldn't do it too often. Obviously, there's stuff injected into the chicken. I mean, if you're doing, you know, totally organic stuff, I'm not sure I'd use it like as my main feeder, but in a pinch, I guess. Not hot dog, though. Gotta swear off the hot dog. Not a good food choice for a tarantula as far as I'm concerned. Now, speaking of feeders and incredibly inventive ways to work with feeders and make sure that your tarantula is well fed, this one is actually, I've heard this one a few times now, and most recently about a year ago, where somebody contacted me to give me a suggestion for as far as how to make sure the tarantulas are fed in a natural fashion and in making an easier way to keep their feeders, because they're like, hey, you don't need to keep the feeders separately. I keep my feeders right with my spider. Now, in this instance, the individual had like a 10-gallon aquarium, and what they did was they had the spider, and it had its burrow and everything, and then they had crickets running live with the tarantula, in with the tarantula, just a bunch of crickets basically doing their thing. They had put a little cricket house. It was like a Tupperware thing that they had cut a hole into so the crickets could go in and out of it, and they filled that with like carrots and cricket food. And the idea was that in the wild, tarantulas don't have to wait for a person to feed them. That's silly. In the wild, they're able to find prey anywhere they want all day long. So their thought process was, I'm not going to feed my tarantula once a week and drop a cricket in. I'm going to let the crickets or the prey items live with the tarantula, and then the tarantula can just eat whenever it's hungry, kind of like one of us coming down at midnight to get a midnight snack. And their thought process was, this is going to be much more healthy and, you know, natural for the tarantula, because it's not on some artificial schedule that the keeper allows it to eat on. It's able to eat whenever it wants, like it would in the wild. So this one, obviously, this one I had to do some, you know, I went back and forth a little bit because I was like, okay, here's the deal. We do not want to leave live prey items in with our spider. They can actually harm a molting spider. And I talked about how the fact that they, when the spider flips over, it's very moist and soft and unable to protect itself. And there's been instances with prey items actually eating and killing the spider. And if you put a bunch of them in there, they could do that. And they're like, no, they have the carrots. They're going to stay away from the spider. They don't want anything to do with the spider because they have everything they need in their little home. They can go in there and eat. They're not going to need to eat the spider. I also tried to explain that in the pictures that they showed, the spider was kind of curled up in a stress pose in the corner. And you could see a lot of crickets. We are talking about probably a couple dozen crickets in with a spider, and that some spiders can become stressed out when there's too many prey items in there. So even if they want to eat one or two, but if there's a bunch of them still moving around and going around the enclosure, that can kind of freak them out. I've seen ones kick hairs. I've seen ones try to scramble away from them. That's not a good situation from the spider, but this individual was not having it. She said, nope, this is definitely the way I've been doing this now. And her, I believe believe it would honestly only been like a few months. The spider hadn't even molted in her care yet, because I was trying to, again, explain that, hey, it may be okay now, but when your spider goes to molt and is not hungry, those crickets are going to be bothering the heck out of it. They can harm it. She was not having it. She had decided this was the way to do it, that she would do this with all of her spiders. She would create little hotels for the praetums so that they had a place to go, and that they could, when they came out and ventured out, the spider could grab them as it needed food, as it wanted to eat. It would have them there. So I was not successful talking her out of it. She actually did not respond to my last email. This was one that I looked up. She was very set on the fact that this was working for her and that she saw no issues with it, was not listening to reason as far as the, you know, the danger she was potentially putting her spider in. She did have really nice set up enclosures, but it was really weird seeing that little Tupperware thing with a hole on the side. And it was a hole big enough for the crickets, the feeders, to get out, but not for the spider to get in. That was her theory, that they could just run there when they wanted to. It would be a more naturalistic type of arrangement for it to get food, but honestly, not a good situation. That one was frustrating for me because, again, she was trying to say, listen, there's absolutely no harm in this, and I was showing her links to things that showed that they could actually hurt the tarantula, but she wasn't here. So that was one that one did leave me a little bit frustrated. That one was a situation where you could tell the spider was not digging it. You know, it probably did eat a bunch, but it literally was surrounded by crickets, which is not a good, not to mention, it's just not a clean environment. Those crickets are eventually going to die and rot. There was so much wrong with this situation, but sometimes you just can't get to people. You just can't get them to listen to you, to listen to reason. And those are the ones you just kind of have to walk away from and just pray that it works out okay for the spider. The next one was somebody that contacted me that had found my Tom's Big Spiders website, and it was one of those ones where they send you this large email, first telling you that they appreciate what you got on your site, but then going on and on about all the things they do that are different and stuff, which are fine. Again, I don't mind getting those. I've gleaned things from those before, but there's a certain type of keeper that really reads much more into their spider as far as the emotional connection they think that their animal has with them. They absolutely adore their spiders, and in their minds, their spiders adore them. So you often get these long emails explaining all the ways that their spider shows that they love them. And in this case, this was bonkers, but I swear to God, true. The individual would sleep with her spider. That was her thing. That was their quality time together. She would take her spider out. She said they would often watch movies together, and the spider would sleep on her chest, and she would fall asleep with the spider on her chest. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. Sounds like, you know, my canned response, sounds like you have a real sweetheart there. Aren't you worried you're going to roll over on her? And she's like, oh, no. She's very good. She'll sit on my chest. And then some nights I will go to roll over, and she'll just climb and sit on my head or on my shoulder. And then the next morning I take her and I put her back in her enclosure. I was aghast. Like, I can't even imagine. And I have some spiders that, again, we're not going to get into the handling debate, but I have spiders that I can guess that I could probably take out and would just sit there and watch a movie with me. Again, the spider wouldn't get much out of it. I might feel like I have a companion watching the movie. I'd probably talk to it and would be upset when it didn't respond back, whatever. But to actually fall asleep like that, it blew my mind. And I tried to explain, like, A, your spider could decide to walk away, fall off the bed, and die. B, your spider has urticating hairs. If it ever got spooked during the night or you accidentally slapped it, it could get urticating hairs on your face and your pillow and your eyes and your throat and your nose, places you don't want urticating hairs. B, the spider, you could easily roll over and crush your spider while you slept. Like, there was just so much inherently wrong with this practice. And it was very difficult to try to, because again, you're dealing with somebody's, and this is where it gets tricky with this kind of stuff. This woman doesn't think she's doing anything wrong. In her mind, they have a great relationship. Her spider likes to chill and watch movies with her. I mean, that's awesome. Who doesn't want to hide? I've sat and watched movies with my dog before. I mean, they're not paying attention, but you feel like you got some company. But this was totally different, because we all know that spider's not watching the movie. The spider is not going to be able to recognize that, hey, I got to make sure that if this girl rolls over, I'm not underneath her. There's a very good chance it could fall off the bed. There's some, again, I've already named all the things that were wrong with it. So I tried to convince her this was a terrible idea. But again, these individuals that read that type of emotion into their animals can be very difficult to reason with, because in their mind, that's, they're getting a lot of enjoyment. They're getting a lot out of sharing this time with their spiders. And in their mind, their spider is getting something out of it. And they're not listening to reason when you try to explain your spider is not getting anything out of this. Your spider's not enjoying the movie. Your spider's not enjoying your company. And all you're doing is taking your beloved animal and putting them at an unnecessary risk. I even think I said to her at one point, it would be like your dog likes to stand on the top of your car when you drive. Would you drive around with your dog on the top of the car? No, that would be incredibly dangerous for the dog. What you're doing is very similar to that, falling asleep with the spider, taking naps or going to night at, you know, the end of the evening with your spider on your chest, is in the same alley as driving around with your dog just standing on the roof of your car. It's a recipe for disaster. It's not going to end well. So unfortunately, I think she did get offended. I did try to be nice as possible about it. I was trying not to offend her, but I think she did get offended and stopped the communication on it. I'm hoping that something minor happened that just maybe, because with instances like these, they're going to have something happen that makes them go, oh God, this is a bad idea. So I'm hoping something minor happened that didn't involve the spider getting hurt that maybe got her to rethink this, but that's it. Never found out how it panned out. Not sure if she still does this. Hopefully she does not, because that's just honestly got a recipe for total disaster, especially for a pet you obviously adore. You just adore it a little too much and not in a good way. So this next one happened a while back, and it was in response to, I think it was my originally an article talking about humidity and temperature and how we fixate too much on it and it's not that complicated. And somebody came on and basically took exception to the fact that I said temperature and humidity were not something you need to worry about, and went a step forward, further with it. And in the video, in the article, I actually mentioned there's no idea, or we can't deduce what actual ideal temperature is in many instances. He came to me having told me that he had figured out what the exact ideal temperature was for spiders. And we're talking about exact ideal. He had it down to, it was something along the lines like 83.4 degrees was the optimal temperature for tarantula comfort and growth. And how does he know this, you might ask? Well, he had been keeping tarantulas for a whopping year, and I'm not judging people that aren't keeping that long, but I'm judging people that try to do experiments with a handful of animals over a very short period of time. He had been keeping for a year, and during that year, he had done experiments where he basically heated up the enclosures to different temperatures, different, you know, all the way starting down, I guess, around 70 degrees to 90 or something, and then measured how the tarantulas were supposedly eating and what their behaviors were. Now, he found when he jacked the temperatures up, the tarantulas were more active. They were climbing around. Now, I would again point out the fact that sometimes when the temperatures go up, you have a situation where if they go up too high, the tarantulas are climbing around because they're trying to find reprieve from those temperatures. So I've had ones come out of their burrows. They're not coming out because they're like, ooh, wow, this temperature is nice. They're coming out because their burrows aren't giving them the cooler temperatures they want. So they're searching for them. But he had done all these quote unquote scientific experiments to prove that this 83.3 or 83.4 was the absolute optimal temperature to keep a tarantula. So then I came back with, well, how do you go about keeping them at 83.4? And then I got this huge convoluted description of these, the way he checks the temperature on the surface using one of those thermometers you can point, how he has more than one thermometer in each enclosure, one up high, one up low, one, you know, sometimes measures the burrow, where he has a heat lamp above it, where he has a heat mat behind it, and he moves them to get the exact height. It was crazy. And I tried to, again, I get that some people do that. Can you say it's wrong? No, if they keep their tarantula healthy, it's not wrong. I think it's more work than needs to be done. And I tried to explain to him, listen, I've kept them for years now, and I don't do any of that. And his response was, well, you're not keeping them correctly then. So that was kind of, I kind of discontinued the conversation after that, because I couldn't reach him with the fact that my tarantulas were doing just fine, that I had bred tarantulas before, that I had had no issues raising slings all the way up to healthy adults, with never measuring the heat inside or the temperature inside the enclosure without using extra heat sources like heat mats and heat lamps, but he wasn't hearing it. He had his idea about how it would work. Again, I wish this was one I tried to find. I could not find the original email, because it really was bonkers how much thought he put into this and how literally down to the decimal point he was with his temperatures, because in his mind he had found the absolute, again, we talk about those ideal temperatures are ridiculous. He felt that he found it, and he could tell by the growth rate and by how they were eating, which was bizarre because some of the species that he had were actually slower growing ones. And in a year time, you could not really make any scientific conclusions about their growth rate in a year time if you're doing like a Brachypelma, a Faunapelma, a Gramostola species, and I believe a couple of them were those. But it was an interesting, kind of frustrating conversation because he was not hearing anything other than the fact that what he was doing was right. And my big thing was I was able to just kind of go, all right, well, it's obviously working for you. That's awesome. But he wasn't letting go with the fact that I was not treating my tarantulas correctly by being so lackadaisical with measuring the temperatures inside the tank. So agree to disagree on that one. I never found out what happened with the guy because we stopped chatting after that. It just wasn't going anywhere. But hopefully somewhere along the lines he stopped, because I just see that with the heat lamps and the heat mats, that is a recipe for disaster. One day he's not going to catch it. One day something's going to malfunction. He's going to roast his tarantulas. But it was a strange conversation to say the least. It was a frustrating conversation to say the least. And again, it shows just how much as a hobby we are sometimes obsessed with hitting these ideal humidity and temperature requirements. I mean, this is the guy took it to an obsessive level, and as sadly, ironically, probably has tarantulas that are in peril because of it. All right, so there's been a lot of talk about tarantulas and enriching tarantulas' environments. I'm not going to chime in and get into the debate on that, but there are folks out there that believe that tarantulas need stuff to enrich their environment. This is where you get the whole thing where they put ping pong balls in with tarantulas and watch the tarantulas move them, and people are like, look, they're playing with it. In my mind, the tarantula sees a foreign object it doesn't want in its house, and it's trying to get rid of it. But there are other people that believe that in those instances, the tarantula is actually enjoying playing with it. We're not going to get into that one, but I did encounter an absolute extreme example of this, of someone trying to provide their tarantula with enrichment. And this was a young lady who decided, I believe this one was really young, she was probably in high school, I think, but she had hamsters and had the hamster habit trails that you can get where they have all the pipes and hoses and everything. And she had decided that her tarantula would benefit from having an enclosure that more closely resembled the type you would give a hamster, with the habit trails, with the tubes that they can all climb in. So she sent me pictures of her altered habit trail with her tarantula in it that she said her tarantula would use. It would sometimes crawl into some of the tunnels. She'd find it in the tunnels. So that's how she proved to herself that it actually enjoyed it, that it was moving all around, exploring its environment. It hadn't burrowed. It hadn't really adopted to a hide that she'd given it. It spent a lot of its time climbing around the pipes. And she basically had like two tanks hooked up with a bunch of these tubes going on it, with the tubes going up, with the tubes going around. It was one of the craziest things I'd ever seen in my life. So I was trying to explain to her that, you know, in the wild, the majority, and I believe it was, I want to say it was a G. porteri, but I could be wrong. It was some type of beginner species, but I was trying to explain that in the wild, they find a burrow, they adapt to it, and they stay. The majority of species out there will stay at that burrow and wait for prey to come to them. They don't necessarily go out active hunting, say like a huntsman spider or a wolf spider, but she wasn't having it. Nope. She would drop crickets in the different places. So it would have to, her idea was it needed exercise, which again, these are ambush predators. These are masters at conserving their energy. They wait, they sit there, they look idle, and then they spring and attack. They're not going to go, they don't need to go run like a dog. They don't need to be walked. I've gone into this before. It's something that people sometimes have trouble adjusting to when they move from the furry pets, the vertebrates, to tarantulas. They don't need exercise. But in her mind, it needed exercise. It needed enrichment. She did not have, luckily, the wheel in there that they spin on, but she did have like various toys and stuff that she said that she'd sometimes find it plopped on top of a toy. And in her mind, it meant that she liked the toy. So again, I don't know if this, and I got to be honest, I don't know if this was really posing any real threat to the spider. I mean, my only issue was with some of those tubes she had set up, that if a spider should lose its grip and fall, it could be an issue. But she seemed to have enough substrate in both the enclosures. They each had hides in them. She had, you know, the appropriate substrate in them. It's just the tarantula could go roam around if it wanted to. So again, this one, it ended on a positive note where I was like, wow, that's really neat. I never would have thought of that. Please let me know how it goes, because she had just set it up like this. But again, I think I forgot to mention, her trick with the crickets was she would put crickets in like one side side of the container and not the side of the container, or one enclosure and not the enclosure the spider was in hopes that the tarantula would go hunting in the other enclosure. That would entice it to go explore and by default get some exercise. I left that part out. So that was part of it. But really interesting idea. I don't think I agree with it. I'm one of those ones that believes that the majority of spiders, when they have their burrow, they sit by their burrow, they wait for prey items to come out. They may venture out a little bit, but they don't need exercise. That's a waste of energy for them. They're good at, they don't know when they're going to get fed. So if they get a prey item, they eat it. It could be a little while before they get another prey item. They're not going to waste their energy by going out and running around and exploring. So interesting concept, to say the least. I thought it was cute. It was a neat idea. The setup was adorable. I mean, the spider didn't look like it was in any danger, but definitely not something that I would try and something I would have thought of. And finally, for the last one, which was the craziest one and probably the most frustrating because I have a pretty good idea how this one ended up, we'll call this one Spider Friends. I had an individual email me a while back saying that they know that people think that tarantulas are cannibalistic, but in their mind, they thought with some conditioning and training, they could create an environment where different species of tarantulas would live together peacefully. Yep, you've heard me correctly. They were going to create a communal setup with different species of tarantulas. Now, it was, if I remember correctly, the individual had a hemorrhoid and a T. albopilosis, and their whole idea, they had the aquarium set up for it. They were starting to introduce the spiders to each other. Now, their great idea was they had the original aquarium set up, the big aquarium set up. They had one of the spiders in it. We'll say the hammer-eye was already in it. They were taking the albopilosis, putting it in a separate aquarium, putting it inside the aquarium with the other spider to introduce them. And much the way we do something called shark tanking, when we breed tarantulas, we will sometimes take the male, put it in a smaller little enclosure, and put that in the female's enclosure so the two of them can get, a whiff of the pheromones. They can recognize each other's there and hopefully stimulate some, hanky-panky so we can get some breeding going on. In this case, they were doing it because they thought the spiders got used to each other in being in the same proximity to each other, that they would eventually adapt to that situation and live peacefully together. Now, I went full bore trying to convince this person that this was an absolutely horrifically bad idea. I explained that this doesn't happen, because his thing was, well, some of them may live in the same area in the wild. They obviously get along. I was trying to explain that they're highly cannibalistic, that there are only a handful of species that can be kept communally, and out of those, only one or two that actually do well in that environment. They don't have to be crammed together. A lot of situations, they have to be obviously the same species and slings that came right out of the sack together, or else you have problems. I explained everything. I said, all you're going to end up with is one big fat spider. You will lose one of your spiders. But this person would not listen. They were convinced that all the years we have kept tarantulas and observed them in the wild and observed them in our own personal collections, that we were all wrong. They just need to be trained. His theory was, it's like when you get two dogs, you don't sit there and keep the dogs apart. You introduce the dogs, you socialize them. So if you socialize tarantulas, you'd get the same type of effect, where they would eventually go, oh, we can live together. Not to mention the fact that dogs aren't arachnids, and the fact that dogs live in packs and do well together, and the fact that dogs don't usually cannibalize each other. That was all thrown to the wind. So we went back and forth a little bit, but the person eventually ended up, I believe, calling me closed-minded and said that he would report back when he introduced and show me how well it worked. Well, you can probably guess how this one turned out. I never did hear from him again. I did not reach out to the person, because I will say that at the end of the conversation, I was getting upset because of my thought process was this was just going to end up with one of those spiders dead. And I believe the hammer-eye was the smaller of the two. Albopilosis are great hunters. I'm guessing the hammer-eye probably got eaten, but sadly, they would not listen. But this is what happens, unfortunately, where people get ideas in their head and they don't do the research for it, or they do the research and they decide, no, this isn't right. I'm going to try something brand new. And I think in some of these instances, I didn't get into how many people over the years have talked to me about creating designer tarantulas because of the possible hybridization. I'm not touching that one in this particular podcast, but it was along those lines where people get it in their head that, the whole hobby community is wrong. This is a cool thing. This is going to be something neat. I'm going to be famous for it. And unfortunately, they're not able to recognize the folly in what they're trying to do. They're not able to recognize the fact that 99% of the keepers out there would immediately tell them that what they're doing makes zero sense, and that in many instances is putting their spider at risk. So again, pour one out for the poor Hamurai or Albopilosis that inevitably got eaten in this situation. It was incredibly frustrating. It was incredibly upsetting because I knew what was going to happen on this. The guy just wouldn't listen. So sometimes you win them, sometimes you lose them. I think this is when I lost it, and unfortunately a spider probably lost its life because somebody wanted to try to play, God and put tarantulas in a situation that completely goes against their nature. So that's what I've got for this one. I'm sure I've got some more that I could pull out if people enjoy this. I just, again, it's not about making fun of people, but it's just, I think it helps put in perspective sometimes how much misinformation is out there, how misinformation gets spread, and how people can just take information that's good information and just run the wrong way with it and come up with these really bizarre conclusions. Some of these are from folks just kind of becoming too attached to their animals. It's hard to get too upset with them because the things that they're doing and saying and think they're observing are because they absolutely adore their animals. But unfortunately, they adore them to a point where it's not allowing them to look at things rationally and clearly. And as a consequence, they're putting their beloved animals at risk. In other instances, it's people trying to do things that just make zero sense and won't listen to reason. And in those instances, yeah, I get a little frustrated, I get a little irritated, I get a little angry because, again, the information's out there, but you can only do so much. So hopefully you enjoyed that. I kind of had fun doing this. It was kind of fun to go. For me, it was kind of therapeutic after having the week I had with some of the comments I got and stuff to just kind of go through and recognize, all right, there's some fun to be had when people come and say bizarre things to you that if you look at it in the right perspective, it can be kind of entertaining for all the wrong reasons. So kind of a train wreck here, but hopefully a fun one at that. So that will do it for this one. As always, you can find me on tomsbigspiders.com. You can find me on Tom's Big Spiders on YouTube. I just put up the video for my Theraphosa Blondii care. We'll probably do something with that on the podcast as well, because I know some folks have been asking me to do more of the care guides on the podcast. I just try to mix it up a little bit and not do them all the time, because I know for some people, if they don't have that particular species, they don't care to hear the care guide. So we'll definitely do kind of the notes on that. That'll do it for this one. As always, guys, stay safe, and we'll catch you all next time.